Hello, everyone. I'm Kevin Weiner, and thanks for tuning in to another podcast of Beyond Everything Radio. And as always, I have a question for you. How well do you know Judaism? That's a loaded question, I know, but it's important if we're going to gain the trajectory of understanding that this series is going to offer. If your answer caused you to think about traditions and holidays and kosher religious practices, then my point is already made. In today's podcast and post, we continue with our One World series and focus upon Judaism as the archetype of religion. Can our world ever get along and be at peace if each religion is competing with each other? Is the answer to just homogenize all religions together and cherry-pick those parts that we prefer? I don't think so. Join me now as we pull back to see beyond everything and what it means to be a child of Abraham. Hello, everybody. Thanks so much for coming back to yet another podcast of Beyond Everything Radio. I'm your host. My name's Kevin Weiner, and I like to serve the world as an online pastor, author, and uncoach, among many other things that I do in the world, just like you. I want to welcome you to the program. I want to welcome you to this series. We are in part three today. We are exploring what I call One World. So in order to make peace with each other, get along, understand, move in the path of progress, redemption, restoration, all those things which probably many of you have concluded are impossible, can never happen, and have basically adopted a posture of hopelessness, doubt, right? I mean, this is really where we tend to find ourselves, isn't it? Especially when you think about world religion. Now, this series is using the lens of world religion to pull back and see something bigger. And as we go through this, I'm going to examine not each world religion. I don't have time to exhaustively look at all of them, but probably six or seven of them, of the main ones, so that we can get a sense, an understanding of, one, what are the core beliefs that's kind of there, but more than that, not trying to get locked down into the nuances of each practice of religion, but instead try and see that which is bubbling through. So we've looked at science, right? And now today we're going to focus on Judaism. And the title of today's podcast, it's podcast number 246. It's part of our One World series. It's called Judaism as Archetype. That's right, Judaism as Archetype. So, like I alluded to here, how well do you know Judaism in the introduction? There's so much to be said about it. And in our culture, in fact, Judaism is so culturally understood, more so than it is religiously understood. And as people in our world, especially the younger you are, if you're a millennial, if you're a Gen Y, the chances are very good you are not being brought up or were not brought up in a mainline institutional religion. You may not have religious practices. Your parents may have them and have tried to impose them on you, but you have probably abandoned them, walked away, moved away from them, hold them at some level in your heart, and then some level of disbelief or confusion. This is the trend of the world, and there's a reason for that. And what I'm trying to do here is kind of put some of these pieces together so that you can see something truly amazing. It may take a while, and this is a long form, this is a long game. You're going to have to actually use your brain and think it through. But I think by the end of this series, if you catch the gist of what I'm offering, your life can be opened up and transformed, and you will look at religion through a totally different lens. And I'm hoping that this will liberate those of you who are stuck trapped, burdened in fundamentalism. And fundamentalism is found within every single institutional religion, okay? That's not the basis of all religion. It is simply an aspect of religion that comes up in a process. I think we're going to be able to see that as we look at Judaism today, right? Religion and faith are not the same thing, right? Religion and faith are neither mutually exclusive nor are they coextensive, meaning belief and practice, they're not to be separated, but they are nonetheless distinct from each other. See, this is the root confusion that I think all people have about world religions and why so many are stepping away from them. They say they're not relevant. Science has disproven God. Now, if you have that disposition, but you missed the post 2 weeks ago, go back and listen to One World Part 2, where I talk about science, right? It isn't the bridge that can hold your weight like people think it does. Now, the root confusion here is that all people have about world religion is that most of us cannot discern the difference between those who are devout from those who hold nominally to the belief. And so in every religion, you have those who say they belong to Judaism or Christianity or Islam, but they barely believe. They basically have adopted that religion because that's what their family said they were, but they don't really understand it. And quite honestly, that's quite a lot. Think about it. Most people who say they belong to a particular religion, even if they practice the holidays and everything else, they usually know very little about it. That may not even mean they subscribe to the actual beliefs in that religion. And of course, side by side with them are people who are extremely devout to that religion. So there's a spectrum of understanding and belief and a spectrum to practice. That's my point. And this will help understand where I'm getting at, right? Your goal as a listener and a learner is to see the trajectory from which I'm going. I'm not going to break down Judaism and just do the in and out of it. I've got a big angle lens on here, okay? Now, as a result of this confusion over faith and practice, our world, which usually lacks the ability to discern that, divides us into the categories based upon the religion to which we ascribe ourselves, not based upon the beliefs themselves. And this series is going to widen our view so that we can see that there is something transcendent that all humanity discerns, which is poking through the religion and partially accessed from the religion, as well as obscured by the religion. Now, if you understood that, welcome to some big thoughts, okay? Judaism, as we know it today, is a world monotheistic religion. It focuses on one deity, right? And those who adhere to it range from truly devout to those who hold only to its cultural heritage. And Judaism is really famously known as a culture, as a people, as a tribe, as much as it is as a religion. And it's not the first monotheistic religion, but it's the religion which benchmarked sacred text by establishing the Torah. Now, the Torah not merely is a collection of stories that chronicle the rise of Israel, right? It goes well beyond historical documentation. The Torah establishes a cosmology and anthropology, which is ultimately adopted or imitated or shared or admired in many cultures, in many religions, and in many people. In fact, it's so entrenched into the cultural part that we actually adopt much of these big themes of belief and frameworks about reality from Judaism, especially in the West, because we have Judeo-Christian influence primarily into our thinking. And the Torah provides moral teaching, sure. It provides rules for healthy and egalitarian society. It teaches us how to govern and lead people. and perhaps most importantly, how to self-govern through faith in the divine. Now, along for the ride, in Judaism comes the Mosaic Law, comes the Levitical Law, which pertain to how humanity is supposed to relate in covenant with our Creator and with each other. This is all very, very good. This is why I use Judaism as the archetype, because of its extensive law, its religious law. It never really stopped there. It was certainly, you know, Moses comes down from Mount Sinai with the Ten Commandments, but then it's not long. It's not very many pages in Scripture before you see those commandments are just blown up into hundreds and hundreds of more commandments. And it's all about how humanity is to relate with God, each other, and the world. Now think about that. This is something that our world really lacks and is struggling with. The tensions and the problems that we have is that we all differ on how we should relate with each other and the world. Some people don't look at ecology as a human rights violation, right? They don't worry about what they're doing to the world. That's their sense of that. Others don't look at people with equality in mind. Right, some people don't even consider God. They don't have a religion. They don't believe in such things like that. And so when you have this kind of diversity, how can people get along and work together? Okay? But here it is. Here's a way that people can unify, work together, function together, have a whole, healthy, integrated society. It's all rolled right up in Judaism as an archetype. So beyond the Torah, referred to as the Pentateuch, right, the first five books of the Old Testament, as modern Christians might see it, it's a collection of Hebrew scripture. Beyond the, all of these other Hebrew scriptures, you've got Midrash and tons and tons and tons of story and Hebrew teaching that is layered upon layered upon layered after years and years of history. And these all detail the rise and fall of Israel, and how this faith and covenant with God brings with it a blessing from God to the people who uphold this law, this teaching, this way of living and relating. So you kind of get this rhythm of the people of Israel obeying God, receiving a blessing, disobeying God, receiving punishment or isolation or some kind of curse, right? It's this good boy, bad boy, right? Good girl, bad girl kind of relationship. And if that's the way the theology ultimately grounds us, then we miss some of the stuff that peeks through. But that's nonetheless certainly part of the story. And this is all revealed through the historical events, which are chronicled in the lineage of Moses. They have a lineage of judges, of prophets, of priests, and kings of Israel, right? All of this is really well documented. This is why, you know, I don't know other religions that have this kind of detail and historical, archaeological backing that you can go to and point to and experience like this. So as the tribe and the religion grew, the weight of governing and stewarding this huge group of people became a greater challenge. And how does Israel maintain solidarity to the covenants of its forefathers with new generations? See, the answer has been to increase the number of rules, along with increasing the local means of regulating and practicing those rules. It means you give local control, right? Local priests, local tabernacles, temples, things like that. Local tribes are going up to the one center tabernacle, but having altars and such in your town. So if you go back to my opening statement, this is what becomes the problem. Traditions are established and they become indelibly intertwined with the faith. And so you can't begin to separate now, and if you try and separate now the faith from the practice, you start to run into problems with institutional power. This will happen in every religion, but this is perfectly seen in Judaism, and that's why it's an archetypal picture for us, okay? Now, the simple problem is found in every religion, like I said, but how does one generation confer on the next generation the experience without a structure to encapsulate that experience in? See, we often assume that one causes the other. We always assume that the container brings out the contents. And you can't have the contents without the container. That's what religion teaches us. But that's not true. This is an archetype of religion, of an archetype of religious obedience and tradition. See, obedience to a covenant with one's maker is the hallmark of fidelity, or what we call faith. So whatever happens between you and God, if you hold tightly to that, that's called faith. However, what all religions seem to easily overlook is that their founders had fidelity to God prior to any established covenant. See, in other words, the founders of our religions came to know God and listen and trust God's voice long before the religion, the traditions, ever took shape. See, the form follows the experience, but religion focuses on recreating the form and not always the experience. So what's left to the later generations is a container, but may not have the contents. So if you go back to the story of Judaism, it's Abram. In Genesis 12, 1 through 3, you hear it says, Now the Lord said to Abram, Go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you, and I will make of you a great nation. I will bless you, and I will make your name great so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and him who dishonors you I will curse. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. Okay, so this is loaded, and I'm not going to break it all down. I'm just going to kind of slightly touch on some of this. Abram is the name which means exalted father. But if you know at this point, his name was Abram, but he had no kids. His wife was barren. Now, Abram's name is later changed to Abraham, which means the father of nations. And without question, many people think of him as a Jew. Don't you? Now, his name is changed to reflect that his faith is the hallmark of nations, plural, clearly pointing to those outside Israel alone. Now, if this were not true, no American or Eastern person, nor those outside the lineage of Abraham, could ever see Abraham as their spiritual father or forefather. That would be impossible. So there's something about Abraham that allows all nations, as it says, to go back to Abraham. And what is that? Well, Abraham's obedience to this call or voice of God establishes the covenant of obedience. God says, you go, leave your family, leave your tribe, leave your father, and go into this land that I'm going to tell you about. In other words, that's huge. Leave your inheritance, your identity, leave it all behind, and trust me. Now that is the call that each of us experiences in some way in our life. And this is the hallmark of the faith. This establishes the covenant. God will bless you if you follow this voice. You will become yourself if you finally heed the voice to come out of your life, your name, your fake ID. This occurs long before the Ten Commandments, folks. This happens long before the Levitical law. This happens before any Passover, any feast, or any tradition, ritual, or practice of Judaism. It's not even till many years later that his son Isaac's name is changed to Israel. So Abram, the exalted father, had no children, yet alone a nation. So this is really important for us to kind of get at. You see this? There's something bubbling through. It exists in the Torah. It's pushing through in the life of Abraham. It's seen in our own life as we respond to this call, this cry, this beckoning deep within each of us to find out who we really are, to leave our family, leave our structure, leave our identity, to find our identity in God, to go into this strange place that we don't know where we're going, and just trust this voice that it's leading you in the right place. That is called faith. And we all have it. Now, the clear point of the message from the Torah is that faith or fidelity to God was not intended to be coextensive or the same as religious practices or tradition. It couldn't have been, because this existed long before there was even Judaism. So was Abraham a Jew? No. He wasn't a Christian either. See, what we learn from the Torah and Hebrew Scripture is that the practices and traditions are intended to inspire fidelity to the prominence of the voice of God in life of all people. All people. The goal was to preserve that which Abram experienced. But religion instead went far, far beyond that, as it always does. And therefore, it's archetypal. See, this is why Judaism is archetypal for all world religions. Now, whether the religion predates or postdates Judaism makes no difference. Judaism sits fore and front and center as a nuanced relationship between God and humanity. It just tells the story about this other thing, this part of reality that this we all sort of intuit. We know there's something more. We don't really know. We put a number of names around it, but this is what religion does. Religion puts the walls around it, creates the structure. But there's the other thing, this non-physical reality that weighs upon our own existential experience. That thing, that's what was to be preserved. The pitfalls of religion are its archetypal pitfalls of every religion. See, whether we are talking about Greek mythology or something as modern as Mormonism, Judaism illustrates how a religion in and of itself is not bad, but only limited to serving as a container or a pointer to that which is beyond it. Those places in our human history where the container and its preservation and power are more important than its contents, that's where it reveals the dark side of religion, which has not helped humanity, but has harmed humanity. We know this as fundamentalism, which always stems from institutional power. It's in every religion. It's in science. It's in academics. It's in the arts. It's everywhere. So the meta-narrative that runs through Hebrew Scripture is the revelation of God, which shines through countless diverse individuals as each person, in their own way, in their own time, in their own culture, discover the love of God, which heals them, liberates them, transforms them. So religion is supposed to remind us of this truth, not obscure us from this truth. And that is what the Jewish traditions are to do, which become archetypal for all religious practice. So what do we discover in the Hebrew Scripture is that the voice of God was never intended to be limited to one tribe, one people, or one religion, but it is to be an experience for each person, both personally and corporately. Now, get a load of this. Listen to this verse out of Jeremiah 31, verses 33 through 34. This is the prophet, a Jewish prophet, Jeremiah. This is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel. This is God speaking through the prophet Jeremiah. The name of Israel, by the way, means strives with God. Again, pointing to all people, not just this particular tribe. But this is what it says. For this is the covenant I will make with the house of Israel. After those days, declares the Lord, I will put my law within them, and I will write it on their heart, and I will be their God, and they will be my people. And no longer shall each one teach his neighbor and each one his brother, saying, know the Lord, for they shall all know me, from the least of them to the greatest, declares the Lord. For I will forgive their iniquity, and I will remember their sin no more. Now that is this light beaming through all the chapters of history and drama and confusion, right? The voice of the prophet kind of points this thing through that shows the thing that's beyond the thing. It's bigger than any container, than any religion. It's the meta-narrative. It's the story that's underwriting all the stories. Now, this is truly a wide-angle lens, but with it, the larger, wider truth emerges, and that's the whole point of this series. Every rule, every tradition, every ritual, and every practice is a branch that at one point sprang from this idea that God can speak to anyone in any way, because there is a sense in which all people know the voice of this deeper inner reality. Now, a lot of modern people have abandoned traditional religion and gone into spirituality without a framework, like it's kind of a free-floating belief system. And what they get at is this, is they can say, God can speak to any of us in any way. And we want to hear more about that experience. That is actually a return to the Abrahamic covenant. However, as people begin policing, governing, and controlling the inner experience with God, those in power, they create the rules. They institute the external measurements so that they can validate whether the constituency is valid or invalid, good or bad, right or wrong. It's always a group of dudes at the top that say, this is the way it is. Now, that's always been assumed that these people are God's people. These are the leaders. These are the prophets, the priests, those that God endowed with wisdom and judgment and all of that. And that may be the case. For the most part, it becomes a power play. Now, all low-level religion relies on institutional power. It relies on these power plays. It fear. It relies on guilt and manipulation and to make itself distinct from all other religions. It has to seem like it's better, like it's the one that's leading its followers into the right direction. All the other ones are wrong. And therefore, you know, it confers itself the idea that it's the sole possessor of the true way to live. This is the other's, either or other's duality that squeaks into religion and contaminates it. This is something which does not exist in Abraham himself, nor in any founder of any religion. This is the thing that comes later as the walls of the container are formed. You have to see that, folks. So if you're going to truly go after in faith what your religion is all about, you will ultimately strip down the traditions, practices, and rituals that are there and go back to the true essence that founded it. Because remember, the founder was never following any of those rules and practices of the religion before the religion ever happened. I know, think about it. So why do we accept that for ourselves today? And now here's the answer, because we're just trapped with the fake ID given to us by institutional power. We just believe what the talking heads have told us. Now, Judaism as an archetype gives us a perfect lens to see both the good and the bad of every religion. I mean, focus too much on externals and the faith dies. The faith is replaced with a sterile, dead ritual and a guilt-laden religious practice. Ever heard of that? Ever seen religion as such? Boy, it's everywhere. If we can just keep the focus on that which is just beyond the container, we discover that all people, rather than being excluded, are actually invited to experience a personal covenant with their Maker. So we are all invited into this Abrahamic covenant. Follow the voice of God within. See where it leads. Don't break faith with your awakened heart, as James Finley would say. Now, this can easily be proven in one example. Let's just suppose that the only book for all religions was Psalms or maybe Proverbs, right? That there's only one book for all religions. Like, there's only one sacred text. Like, if you pulled just Psalms out, this book, it doesn't provide any ritual or a particular religion. And it clearly provides a way of being in the world. It provides a way of relating to one's Maker. It offers a cosmology and an anthropology that would perfectly preserve each and every religion on earth without any tribal distinctions or exclusionary power plays. So if you just pulled out the teachings of Psalms or Proverbs, it doesn't teach you a particular religion. It reveals the wisdom of God and the truth of God. Now, if this is possible with only one book or two, it's also possible in all of the Hebrew Scriptures. So why stop there? And we're going to circle back to the New Covenant later in the series. But for now, I hope you can see precisely how converting to a religion can bring about the wrong end, although not necessarily. I'm not telling you not to convert to a religion, but I can tell you that converting is not what you've been told it is. See, and if you can hear the voice of God calling through in one place, then you can train your ears to hear it in all places. And if you can hear the voice of God calling you and you follow it, you are converting to the voice of God. So the beauty of the Hebrew Scripture is that it shows this amazing love story bubbling through the evil and failing of human history. It reveals the higher, more transcendent reality to which we must strive and allow to soften our hard hearts and look closer, look inward. See, if we can capture this, then the experience of Abram has been our experience too. He is then your spiritual father. Whether you're an American, whether you're a direct descendant of Israel, whether you're from China, it doesn't matter. Do you see it? All people now will know him. That's the archetype of Judaism. All peoples of the earth can be grafted into the faith with or without the structure that comes after its founder. Folks, if you can grasp this, you are on the path to inner transformation and external liberation. Once that happens, we are rescued, that is, saved, and the world can become new again.